Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Welcome into the Rockies Insider. I'm your Rockies Insider, Patrick Lyons, feeling and sounding a lot better than you've probably heard me. But this Padres series is what we're going to get down on. It was kind of a fun series other than Saturday night. It was an interesting one, to say the least. There was enough meat on the bone to feel good about losing 2 out of 3 to the San Diego Padres, failing to secure their 6th series win of the second half after dropping back-to-back games to the Padres with the 8-1 loss on Sunday. Broncos may have won by 8. Rockies lost by 7 the first week that they line up on the schedule together. Rockies lose their 103rd game of the season on Sunday, tying them for their most losses in a single season in franchise history. They went 2-7 on this 9-game homestand, the longest during their season. They've now lost 13 of their last 16. Not looking great to finish this year out in this capacity. Certainly, we know they've been a lot better under Warren Schaefer since he's taken over. But overall, you would like to finish strong, and perhaps they'll still be able to do that in their final 19 games of the season, only 6 of which are going to be at home. So this next week, they're in SoCal, 3 in LA, 4 against the Padres again, but in San Diego. Then they're back home for 3 against the Marlins, 3 against the Angels, and that's it for the home slate before 6 more games on the road, 3 in Seattle, 3 in San Francisco, where they wrap up their season. So 19 games left. They're going to need 2 more wins. That shouldn't be a problem. 2-17. I'm not sure that they even had a 2-17 stretch this year. Maybe they had one stretch of 2-17, even at their worst. But then go 2-17, at least 2 wins, they will avoid setting the modern era record for most losses in a season, even a tie that would be 121. So 2 is going to steer them clear as they are currently at 40-103. Now, of these 6 series I just went through, 3 are against postseason clubs. That's Dodgers, Padres, Mariners, all of which are on the road, and 4 of the final 6 series are against teams at 500 or above. The only other team that is above 500 but will not be going to the postseason probably is the San Francisco Giants. On Sunday, 8-1 loss. Rockies just not in this game at all. They get down early, 2 runs in the first, and Tanner Gordon, I think he ended up allowing 3 home runs. He allowed at least 5 earned runs in a start for the first time since early August, August 10th, when he got lit up in Arizona against the Diamondbacks. But he only ended up lasting 3 2/3 innings. Luis Peralta was the first one to come out, and he looked better than in the past, but he did end up giving up a home run himself. Ezekiel Tovar went 1-2, exited the game early, but I think that was just more as a precautionary measure. In general, in the second half, he is a bright spot, definitely overlooked as a bright spot, batting 2nd in the lineup on Sunday, .333 with 11 RBI in his 27 games at Coors post-All-Star break. That was good to see. Warming Bernabéu went 2-3, back-to-back multi-hit games for the 3rd time this season. Good to see him rebound just a little bit there. During a game, again, the Rockies, unfortunately, were just not in. And it was a long game, 3 hours and 4 minutes. I mean, that used to be league average. But with the pitch clock, these games move a lot quicker. I'll get to the Friday game because that was the thing about this weekend that, okay, they won 1 out of 3, but there was Hunter Goodman and there was Kyle Freeland. A lot to talk about. That's the meat on the bone. Those 2 guys individually, really, really good. Saturday, not a good one, unfortunately. By the way, shout out to My man Felix, meeting up with him at the ballpark, really great to say hi to him. But Saturday, a 10-8 loss that was not as close as the final score might lead you to believe. McCade Brown gave up 6 runs in the first inning. At one point, I believe it was 10-2. So the Rockies did chip away. And, you know, I was at the game on Sunday with my mom. That was her birthday wish, was to attend the game. And I said, all right, well, maybe the 7th inning they can get something going. It might be too late, because by that point it was already 8-1. But I thought, 7th inning, I mean, if they can chip away with a couple runs and then maybe a couple more runs in the 8th, maybe, just maybe. And I believe they got the first 2 runners on that inning. Nearly hit into a double play. No, only got 1 out, and then double play. So 1st and 2nd with no outs, they weren't able to get anything. At that point, it really felt like there wasn't going to be that late push like we've been seeing, like we saw on Saturday, getting it close to 10-8. Padres, with that win, ended up snapping a 5-game losing streak. They scored 10 runs on Saturday, which nearly matched what they had done during their 5-game losing streak. They had 16 hits, which tied for the 2nd most in a game this season. The other time was also against the Rockies, May 10th, where they had 24. And the big story, of course, on Saturday night, after homering for the 28th time on Friday, Hunter Goodman immediately goes out, hits number 29, sets the Rockies franchise record for most home runs by a catcher, breaking Willian Rosario's record from 2012. Congratulations to Hunter Goodman. Absolutely amazing season for him in his first full season as a catcher. I was looking into it, then I lost track of my thought at some point on Friday's game, but thinking about how many games at catcher he's played as a professional. If you're just talking about at the big league level, he had 19 starts as a catcher entering this season, 23 games, period. 23 games at the major league level. So in terms of catching, you could say he was a rookie catcher in that capacity. Still not truly a rookie, but crazy to think that he's been able to do it, has been pretty much at league average. Baseball Reference actually has him just a hair above league average defensively. So that's really promising for him. Huge for the Colorado Rockies. Next up for him, 30 home runs, 100 RBI. Don't believe we've seen that since Nolan Arenado did it in 2019. So he is 1 home run away, 15 RBI. Shy of that mark. If he is able to do that, as I said on the last podcast, I think he could get some MVP votes down ballot. You know, again, all it takes is 1 or 2 people with a 9th or 10th place vote. Maybe he finishes 22nd in MVP voting, but I think there is a chance we could see something like that happening for Hunter Goodman, because, you know, he's been that quality. He's been that solid for the Rockies this year. And it's just good to see that for him. He didn't play on Sunday, got the day off, day game after the night game, trying to preserve him just a little bit. 10 for 17 with 2 doubles, 3 homers, and 10 RBI over his last 4 games. During the 7 games he had played during the 9-game homestand, 14 for 29 with 2 doubles, 3 homers, and 11 RBI. So right there, the decision for the Rockies to give Hunter Goodman more off days has benefited him tenfold. That's been huge. My concern that I had with them not wearing him out, but wearing him down by having him catch the first 2 night games of a series and then DH for the day game, was that, man, they are going to grind him down to a stump. And I figured, even if you pull the reins back just a little bit to slow him down with maybe 1 game behind the dish, 1 at DH, and then another off day. Maybe not every series doing that, but even still, you pull back the reins, it still might be too late. It still might be hard for him to catch his proverbial breath. But no, not the case. Not just sort of leveling off or maybe being a tick worse. No, he's been arguably better now than he was in the first half of the season. So that's just been wonderful for this organization and for a really nice young man like Hunter Goodman. So good for him. Also good for Jordan Beck, who in that game on Saturday night, I think that his home run made the score 10-8. So that was a big clutch homer for him. His 15th of the season, his first since August 3rd, tied a season high with 3 RBI. He's done that 4 times this season. 3 of his 5 games so far this month have been multi-hit efforts. Entering Sunday, .421 batting average, produced at least 1 RBI in his last 3 games. So a guy who in his first full season in the majors is finishing strong. And I say first full season because, yeah, last year he was in the majors essentially the entire time he was healthy, but he did miss a ton of time with that hand injury where he got a metal plate put in. In fact, that's something I have to check up on him about. I think in spring training I looked at his hand. Last year it was insane. It wasn't necessarily swelling, but you could tell that this man had some kind of foreign body in the back of his hand from the surgery, the plate that was put in there. So really good to see him. You know, last year limited to only those 55 games. Right now he's at 127. Even if he plays 15 of those games, that's 142 games played. Had that brief stint down in the minors before coming back and playing really strong. That's great for the Rockies to have Goodman, to have Beck playing well, Brenton Doyle, Ezekiel Tovar also finishing strong. Having those 4 guys is super important for them next year and going forward. And, you know, unfortunately, I will have to say, because of the trend that we've seen from this organization, and you have to understand the trends, or you have to understand that the Rockies have a propensity for failing a certain way or failing a certain percentage of the time. That's just how they've been operating, or that's just been their success rate. That last year going into this year, it was all about Doyle, Tovar, and Tolia. And one of those 3 did not work out, did not carry over into the next season. So Goodman, Doyle, Tovar, and Beck, maybe one of those 4 don't carry over into 2026 and maybe is unable to take the next step forward, or maybe is unable to really replicate what they were able to do this season. And frankly, you could argue that Tovar and Doyle have not replicated what they did last year. Off the field stuff, injuries obviously have been a factor, have impacted both those guys. So that's obviously no knock on them by any means. That's just one of those things that happen in baseball. Tolia just a straight up abject failure, I guess you could say, in producing to a certain level based off of last season. Teams are going to adjust. You're not going to have as much luck, or just things go your way in general. You're not going to be able to build momentum in the same way. Some guys are, some guys aren't. Tolia wasn't able to keep that momentum going. And so in that capacity, he failed. That being said, he's still tearing it up in AAA. He's still a relatively young man, 27 years old. I think he still has a future in Major League Baseball. I think it would probably be best for him to find that future with another team where he might get more opportunities. He might be able to make certain tweaks from both sides of the plate, maybe even unlock something a little bit better defensively so he can become that potential Gold Glove Award winner at first base. Maybe he's going to go and play some corner outfield somewhere else. He is versatile in that way. So I don't think this is the last we hear of Michael Tolia, but it is, again, just an example of how difficult this game of baseball can be, where just because you think you have something 1 year doesn't mean you're going to have it the next year. And the Rockies' success rate suggests between Beck, Goodman, Doyle, and Tovar, one of those guys is going to fall back next year. That's just baseball. That's all that it is. I think even really successful teams you could look at, and really if you put them under that same microscope, or if you evaluated them in that same way, you might even say, oh shoot, this guy took a step back. This guy wasn't quite as good as he was last year. And sometimes that does have to do with injuries. Mookie Betts, not as good this year as he was last year. So those things are just part of baseball, but it's good to see Beck finishing strong. Doyle, Goodman, Tovar, all finishing strong, really important for this team going forward. Let's get to Kyle Freeland. I was very happy for Kyle Freeland after what was a very frustrating Tuesday. You know, you give up an early home run, then you get ejected, then you get shoved twice, and you leave your team out there shorthanded, and they got to go to Antonio Senzatella, who was needed on Sunday, and you needed a little bit of support with McCade Brown on Saturday because he was done by the second inning. So it was really important for him to get some length. And Warren Schaefer kind of, you know, intimated that on Friday, like, man, we needed some length out of Kyle, knowing that McCade Brown was coming up and Tanner Gordon, maybe, you know, his luck might run out, if you will. And so that certainly was the case for McCade Brown on Saturday. 1 2/3 innings pitch, gave up 6 runs, 12.54 ERA. Remains to be seen if he's going to be a future piece for this team. Look, it's only 3 starts. It's fine. It's not a big deal. But is he a guy that you're going to say is definitively going to be in this rotation next year? Probably not. Gabriel Hughes, is he going to get himself an opportunity to make his debut this year? He certainly was really good on Saturday night, pitching for the AAA Albuquerque Isotopes. Gabriel Hughes earned his 2nd straight win, and it was a game that was abbreviated because of rain, but he only allowed 3 runs, 2 of which were earned in 5 2/3 innings pitched. In his last 3 starts in that hitter's haven known as the Pacific Coast League, he's 2-0 with a 2.08 ERA. I do think he's going to debut by the end of this year. I know they're being cautious about him, but he's still pitching in AAA. So unless he's going to hit that number down in AAA, you could even have him debut, make, you know, 1 start, and then say, okay, he's at his limit. That's fine. Sure, yeah, there might be some people that balk at that and say, well, that's silly. That was pointless. No, he's going to be added to the 40-man roster this offseason. That's a fact. So you might as well just have him make his debut and finish this year strong. You know, give him that little reward that, hey, you did it. You deserve this spot on the 40-man. You pitched great in AA. You showed a lot of promise in AAA. His final start this season, whether it's in AAA or the majors, it's his final start. Let it be in the majors. He should get that opportunity. But Friday, back to Kyle Freeland. They needed length in a major way. Freeland, I'm not going to say he needed a really great start. No, but I imagine he felt bad after leaving his team out there. And, you know, he did get the support of Warren Schaefer on Wednesday, even after on Tuesday night. You know, I think he was a little frustrated that, you know, Freeland got himself in that kind of a brouhaha and ultimately ejected. That was not good. But Freeland starts for the 2nd time in 4 days, 2nd time ever in Rockies history. Jason Jennings did that. I believe the year was 2002. Mark Stout was telling me this. He did mention it on the broadcast. But he's also, Freeland, the first Rockies starter to ever make 2 starts in a 3-game span. That, of course, excludes instances in which the All-Star break fell between the 3 games, right? Where you start the final game of the first half, 4 days off even for the All-Star break. You could start the next game on Friday. You could start in back-to-back games, but we'll throw out the All-Star break, guys. First Rockies starter to do that. A guy who doesn't get an out one day, and then he starts 2 games later and goes 8 shutty. Freeland was outstanding, and this was arguably the best start of his career. Now, anytime you have a no-hitter going into the 9th inning, it's going to be hard to say, oh, well, that was his best start. That was his most dominance. But Freeland did tie a career high with 10 strikeouts on Friday. And when you look at a statistic like game score, which I've talked about this recently, Bill James created it. And, you know, it just gives you points for getting so many outs, getting so many strikeouts. You lose points for walks and for base hits, home runs, things of that nature. This was for Kyle Freeland on Friday night, where he went 8 innings, allowed 2 hits, no runs, no walks, and 10 strikeouts. This was his best game, according to game score. It was an 88, the near no-hitter in July of 2017 against the White Sox when he gave up a 1-out single to Melky Cabrera in the 9th. 87 was the game score for that. Freeland was better on Friday night. And I don't necessarily know if the Padres were a better team. The White Sox They were still in their down cycle. So Padres not playing their best baseball on Friday. But when you look at that lineup, way better lineup for the Padres in 2025 than the White Sox had back in 2017 when Freeland was a rookie. So you throw that into the mix. Friday night was the best start of Kyle Freeland's career. Also, how many of you remember who got the final two outs in that game against the White Sox? His near no-hitter. I was there. I did not remember it. I did not have a credential yet. I went there randomly as a fan. Jordan Lyles got the final two outs of that game, did not allow a hit. On Friday night, Freeland was perfect into the fifth inning until Ramon Laureano tagged a double with one out. I asked Freeland on Friday night, in that fourth inning, he had a 1-2-3 frame, top of the Padres order, Fernando Tatis Jr., Ryan O'Hearn, Manny Machado, struck him out in order, asked him about if that was when, you know, he really started to think, okay, you know, maybe I've got something here. And Freeland just said, you know what, any time that you have a game like that, you are building a foundation. And that you can't throw a no-hitter in the first inning, the second inning, the third, etc. But you can lose one there. So you're just building a foundation. It's almost meaningless. Like, okay, cool. I got those three guys out the second time through the order, the second time that they're seeing me, but I got a long ass way to go. And he did. Freeland also said post game that when he walked off the mound in the eighth, he was expecting to go out for the ninth. He was only at 88 pitches. Schaefer said his decision to move Freeland after eight scoreless innings post game. I asked him like what the conversation was like. And Schaefer did say, next time, might I think about it differently? Maybe. Maybe. Jimmy Hergett started to warm up in the seventh and then sat down in the eighth. Hergett and Vodnik were warming up. And then when Freeland got the final out of that inning, they both went to sit down. And those of us in the press box kind of looked around like, okay. All right. He might be going back out there. Then, of course, we saw on TV, they were getting the hugs. And, oh, yeah, well, maybe in the bottom of the eighth, the Rockies will do something. So Vodnik doesn't need to continue to throw. At that point, Hergett wasn't going to be needed at all. So Vodnik got the job done. He did allow two base runners. So the tying run was at the plate, and it felt like, oh, man, this is not good. This is not pretty. But he locks it down. Freeland did give Vodnik credit for that. He also gave Goodman a lot of credit for a great game called behind the plate. I think there was only two pitches that Freeland called using pitch comp, didn't shake him off once, but Freeland was outstanding, logged a career high tying 10 strikeouts, fourth time he's done it. The last time he did it was August 21st, 2021, against a really bad Diamondbacks team. It was the second longest start of his career. Yes, the near no-hitter was the longest, 8 1/3. He becomes the first Rockies pitcher to strike out 10 in a game since Ryan Feltner last April in that opening home series against the Rays. So nearly two full seasons later. First Rocky starter with 10 strikeouts and no walks since John Gray back in 2021 at Milwaukee. Gray did it in five innings. First to do that at Coors Field, 10 strikeouts and no walks since Herman Marquez, July 31st, 2019. Fifth pitcher ever in franchise history to pitch eight scoreless with at least 10. How about this elite list? All except one. And Freeland, again, not a strikeout pitcher, but he's had his great starts, and it's nice to see him on a list like this of eight scoreless innings, at least 10 strikeouts. John Gray, that ridiculous start, his rookie season against the Padres at home. Valdo Jimenez, October 2nd, 2010 at St. Louis. Brian Bohannon, yeah, that's the outlier, August 28th, 1999 versus Philly at home. And Pedro Astacio, September 14th, 97 at Atlanta. First pitcher, Kyle Freeland, in franchise history to pitch eight scoreless innings and allow two or fewer hits with 10 or more strikeouts, and the first pitcher, home or away, at Coors Field to do that. Incredible. Incredible. That got Goodman going. That was when he hit his 28th home run to tie the record. He also had three hits in that game to go ahead of Willian Rosario for most hits by a primary catcher in franchise history. Rosario had 131 in 2013. Elias Diaz had 30 on the nose. It was his third consecutive three-hit game. Goodman in that contest with two RBI joined Dante Bichette back in 95 as the only players in franchise history with at least three hits and multiple RBI in three straight games. He's just been absolutely outstanding. And Vodnik, although he got himself in that jam there in the ninth, 5 out of 5 in save opportunities, 3 hits, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts in his last 10 2/3 innings pitched, 10 straight appearances, not allowing a run dating back to August 12th. Just incredible stuff for both Freeland and Goodman. You love to see that. That was, again, for those two guys to go out on that. And Goodman's still got more to go. He's still got number 30, which shouldn't be a problem. 15 RBI over the final 19 games, that can be tricky, especially when you're now going out on the road to Southern California, where, if you remember at the beginning of this season, Rockies had a scoreless streak. They didn't score a single run in San Diego in 27 innings. Not great. So they've got some tough competition over the next 3 days against the Dodgers. Monday night, 8:10 Mountain Time. Oof. Chase Dolander, 2-12, 6.77 ERA against Tyler Glasnow, who's 1-3, 4.81 ERA. Tuesday night, same deal, 8:10 p.m. Emmett Sheehan, 5-3, 3.59 ERA against Herman Marquez, 3-12, 6.19 ERA. And then Kyle Freeland, 4-14, 5.10 ERA goes against fellow NL West left-hander Blake Snell, 3-4, 3.19. So he's been good since he's returned from the IL. So Snell's got Giants, Padres, and Dodgers under his belt. Is he, well, sure, he's more likely to play for the Diamondbacks than the Rockies, but that would be interesting that he would get that close for all five teams. Remember, only two players have ever done it, Matt Hergis and Steve Finley, both in 2007. Finley did come first, playing for all five NL West teams. At Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons, MLB, Rockies Insider, you name it, YouTube, X, Blue Sky, appreciate you dropping by. Hope you enjoyed this one and appreciated my enthusiasm, because, again, it just felt good with Goodman and Freeman. No, at least I didn't say Goodland. Goodman and Freeland having a really solid weekend, and these are some of the things that you sort of have to celebrate in a marathon and in a really down year like this, where the Rockies might not even get that record for most losses in a single season, which some people are going to be happy about, some people not. Some people worried that because they aren't going to, more likely than not, set that record, that maybe the front office, maybe ownership says, hey, those changes that we made, we were able to avoid the iceberg. We avoided it. We didn't hit it. Granted, we do have some scrapes. We are going down, but we are not going to be sinking very fast. So, you know, we've got about 24 hours before another ship can reach us. We are sinking, but we didn't hit the iceberg. So do we need to make more changes? That's the worry that's out there. Well, time will tell. We should be able to find out in about 3 weeks' time when the season ends. Because if it doesn't happen in that day or two after the season ends, I don't know that it's going to happen. I don't know if those major changes are going to happen. We'll see. Appreciate you dropping by. Appreciate that momentum. But unfortunately, that kind of momentum is only as good as my next show. So, of course, I'll talk to you Tuesday morning.